Welcome, it's Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr here on a Friday afternoon. Let's revisit a visit we had with Ian McCray, University of Minnesota Extension entomologist up in Crookston. The forecast for soybean aphids, still a little early for them to show up, but Ian, what's the forecast?
Yeah, they've showed up a little bit earlier this year, and so their populations are, you know, they're establishing and they're starting to roll on. So the numbers probably in the valley and through Minnesota, North Dakota, we're probably still at a point where, yeah, you should be scouting, but I don't think there's really heavy populations. You go down farther south, they've had them for a little bit longer. I'm not sure if there's a lot of spraying going on down there. I'm not sure whether they're at threshold yet or not, but I do know they had them earlier. So, yeah, their populations are probably building a little bit faster than ours are.
Yeah, like you said, time to be aware. They're out there. We've got a good crop coming, so we've got to protect it.
Yep.
Is there any way to predict? I used the weather forecast analogy. Is there any way to make a good prediction on what kind of a soybean aphid year it's going to be?
Well, not so much for the year. I mean, we do counts of soybean aphid eggs. In the fall, a lot of us will go out to the buckthorn. This is a weird insect, and I'm an entomologist. I mean, I make my living with things that got six legs, but this one's still a little odd. Aphids as a whole, they overwinter on different plants than they feed on during the summer. So you've got an overwintering host, or most species do. Some of them will feed on the same. But they've got an overwintering host where they'll lay eggs, and then you've got this summer host where they feed and build big numbers. And, you know, there's no males out there throughout the summer. They're all females, so they're giving birth to live offspring. So populations get big really fast. When you do see a winged aphid, that's because that job is to go out and find a new place to have a colony. So, you know, when we have those soybean aphid flights in the end of July and early August, that's what's going on. They develop a wing generation, and those gals kind of fly off and find a new place to start feeding.
Yeah, like you said, a weird bug. As the
really
temperatures rise, the birth rates go up, and all the babies are born pregnant.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't know if you remember the old Star Trek episode about tribbles, but they kind of defined that as the same way. And I thought, oh, I know what they're talking about. Those are space aphids.
Pretty cool. Now, but you were going to say something. I'm interrupting you.
Yeah. So they overwinter as eggs on buckthorn. I mean, you do get males starting to develop in the fall, and that's when you have sexual reproduction, and then they have an egg. And these eggs are really tolerant of cold. I mean, they'll last down into the mid 20 below zeros, you know, so they're fairly tolerant of cold. So if we have a really cold winter, that may or may not affect them. You know, if you have snow cover over those eggs, they'll stay a little warmer too. And so we really don't have a good way from the weather to say whether there's going to be a big year or a bad year. Ordinarily, if we had low aphid numbers the previous year, that means we're probably going to start out with low populations the next year. That's no guarantee that we will have low populations all the way through the season, though, because, again, we'll get these flights and you could end up with a late season outbreak. And that's typically what kind of happens up in the valley. Because the weather kind of holds off, and their best reproductive weather is usually towards the end of July. And also we get flights of immigrating aphids, and they contribute to our numbers. So we usually have our kind of big populations end of July and early August.
Back to the weather forecast analogy, when you look outside the window and it's raining, it's easy to make a forecast for rain. One of our region's most unwelcome guests are here. You look outside and there they are, Japanese beetles. How bad are they this year?
You know, we Japanese beetles are really restricted in population. We had an introduction only in the last few years into the, you know, that kind of area that's around Fargo and that kind of west side of North Dakota. But they do spread. They don't travel that fast, so we have yet to see large Japanese beetles up north up here. But yeah, we started to see some down in that Fargo area, and I'm not sure about what the populations are doing this year. I know down in the cities, they're starting to pop out, and in fact, they're having problems with them in the plots out on St. Paul campus. So I do know that the numbers are kind of rising down there, and it's certainly about the time of year when you want to be looking out for those, yeah.
Yeah, the horticulture extension folks down there on the St. Paul campus, they're the ones that are complaining. So I guess...
Well, actually, so are the soybean researchers, because it's turning out to be another, occasional defoliator in our plot down there. And certainly it's kind of more common in around the city areas because of the way these things have an affinity for turf. But we have seen down in South Central and in Southern Minnesota and down into Iowa, they've become a problem in commercial fields as well. So these do have the potential of developing into a problem and a problem defoliator in commercial production. And they seem to survive quite well on soybeans. So yeah, that's something we need to watch out for too.
Yeah, no wonder I couldn't get a hold of Seth Nave. He was busy out there killing Japanese beetles. So anyway,
I know Seth's got a lot of stuff going on right now too. So
yeah, what the potato guys? There's a crop that's infested with all kinds of pests. What should the potato guys be looking for?
Yeah, if you work in pathology or entomology, that's a great crop for us. There's so much to do. Right now, we've got Colorado potato beetle. They're establishing in most of the fields. They're a little later this year up here than they have been in some other areas. They've been going fairly well. The reason Colorado potato beetle are such a problem here is they're an incredibly efficient defoliator. They're extremely good at finding new potato plantings, and they have a real strong propensity to develop resistance, and we're starting to see resistance to the neonicotinoids, and that's been a kind of a standard way to control Colorados in the past, is to put down a neonicot plant, and you usually have pretty good protection. But we're starting to see rate creep, and we're actually starting to see some failures from kind of doing that. We're seeing later emerging beetles as well, and so we're seeing a lot more foliar applications to control CPB, and they're certainly starting up right now. It's, you know, most of the growers and most of the consultants in potato are out scouting for CPB right now.
Wow. So. Yeah, I know, and you got 80 acres. That's a pretty big garden. I know a lot of gardeners with orange fingers, but you can't control those potato beetles in a field with an orange finger.
No. Yeah. No, enter in by the, you know, they don't overwinter in the potato fields. They usually go out into hedgerows and fence rows. They like to be out there. So they're coming in from the edge pretty early. Their growth pattern and their temperature control growth seems to be really tightly aligned with potato development. So as soon as you start seeing stuff popping up, and you can count on a beetle kind of marching in there sometime soon.
And
a little bunch.
Well, Ian, we've got good crops, good gardens, and we must have a good crop of insects coming too. So any other insects of note that you want to alert anybody to?
Yeah, we do have army worms and small grains in a couple of different areas, and in some places they're seeming to be a little hard to control. The numbers are rising, and I have actually heard some people complaining that some of the synthetic pyrethroids aren't giving them great control. But that may also be because we're seeing a lot of rain. I mean, when have we not seen a period where we can spray and not get rain within the next 24 hours? So a lot of these places are getting hit with rains on a fairly, regular basis. So it could be that we're seeing a little bit of decrease in efficacy because the residual efficacy is being hit by, by precipitation being washed off the plant. I don't think it's resistance. Most of our army worm populations are being blown in from, southern locations every year. So it's not like we're spraying the same population over and over and over again over many years. But they're out there. They like to be in lodged grain. If you're going to scout for them and grain isn't lodged, you kind of have to start moving dirt if you're in the middle of the day, because they don't like to feed in the sunlight. They'll feed at the evening, or they'll love to feed in lodged grain. That's a 24-hour buffet as far as they're concerned.
Yeah.
So
how about, there is one pest that we haven't thought about for 25 years, corn borer. And is that another one that's starting to develop resistance to the BT corn?
We have enjoyed this, what they call a halo effect from BT corn, that even a lot of the non-BT corns, sweet corns, seem to be getting some protection because our populations are being driven down, or have been in the past driven down by BT corn, and so there haven't been a lot of corn borers. But yeah, I hear about corn borer, and we're starting to hear reports of it more in some of those non-BT treated plants. They're occasionally a problem even in potatoes, like we were just talking about potatoes. It's something that will get into potatoes occasionally. So I don't know if we're starting to see some resistance to BT with it. I know there are pockets of areas where they are, where they're complaining that they're seeing a lot lowered efficacy to, you know, for corn borers. I don't know if that translates to kind of wide populations up our way though yet. Not quite yet.
Okay, good deal. All righty. Well, you're going to head out and spray. What are you spraying this afternoon?
I'm spraying Colorado potato beetle today.
All right. Kill them all and have a good day.
Well, I hope not. Yes, that would be nice. It's an efficacy trial, so it would be nice to see high efficacy, but I'm not going to spray some, and I don't want those to die. I want to have something to compare them to. So.
Okay, good. You got to leave a check strip.
That's
for
right.
Sure. All right, good science. Ian McCray, University of Minnesota entomologist, Crookston. Thank you very much. Have a good summer, and we'll check in with you before the aphids show up.
Thanks, Mick.
You bet.